We are joined in the studio once again by the one-man media mogul, the creator of Troy Letter, Luke Stoddard Nathan. Welcome back to the show, Luke. What's new this week?
Hey, thank you. I'm going to use that tagline, I think, moving forward. What's new? Well, here's something that's new that wasn't even in the last Troy Letter because it happened after I sent it out on Friday. The city put out an announcement on, and generally, you know, a little tangent before I even start. Generally, when governments aren't trying to tout news, then the stuff goes out on a Friday afternoon, and that's what happened here. The city announced that the Mount Ida Lake Dam, which is a saga that I've been following, basically it's there. The engineers have recently discovered some cracks. That's not a technical term, but some cracks in the wooden structure of the dam. And they've recommended that the city wants to basically do a partial deconstruction of the dam in order to kind of alleviate pressure. Especially they're concerned that if there were to be some sort of flood event, the dam could break, and that would be, you know, potentially cause some property damage, to say the least. And there's been some neighborhood concern about it, so much that the city has already been having these monthly meetings of the city council has been having monthly meetings about it. Anyway, the city put out an announcement on Friday that basically said that they're going to move forward with that plan to deconstruct part of the dam as soon as possible. It didn't give a date or a definite time frame, but it gave the sense, especially from what we already know, that that is pretty imminent. The city actually confirmed that they had a meeting earlier this month with DEC, the Army Corps of Engineers, and Ampersand Energy. That's the owner of the hydroelectric dam that's just downstream from the dam, and that is the interested party that has been also quite concerned about the city's plan, because they're basically concerned that sediment, either from during the process of the city doing this work, some kind of sediment could get kind of stirred up and get into the facility's gears, or, you know, or their equipment or whatever. After this meeting, I guess I should say too, that the Ampersand had even wanted, they had commissioned their own study of the dam, not actually going on site, but with a different engineering firm, but just looking at the city's engineering firm's like report. And they basically concluded that actually you don't have to do this emergency work. But I guess in any case, their mind was changed, or they eventually agreed, because from what the city said in this announcement on Friday, all the parties are now kind of on the same page, and they're going to proceed with this work kind of as the city initially intended to. Here are the next steps, just for your information. First, the contractor is going to kind of work to construct a channel under the dam. Then it's going to remove sediment that is accumulated on the dam structure. Then the middle of the dam is going to be slowly removed so that there's not a drastic change in water level. And then the water will kind of slowly kind of drain from the Mount Ida Lake, which is kind of what neighbors have been concerned about, because not only, I think, largely because of how it is going to look. You know, there was this large lake there. You could drive out and see it. Now it's not going to be there. And so people are concerned, you know, about also the environmental impacts, which the city is basically exempted from kind of taking into consideration, because it's emergency work and sort of life and safety is at stake, I guess. So they're allowed to do it, and the Army Corps and DEC have, you know, signed off on it. And indeed, DEC is basically mandating that the city do this work now. So all that's going to happen. And as I reported a couple of weeks ago, let me back up. The city also has been adamant that it has no long-term plan for the dam, they haven't decided, you know, whether they're going to permanently decommission this dam once it's taken apart, or whether they're going to rebuild it. And if they do rebuild it, you know, what are they going to make it out of? Are they going to rebuild it out of wood, which is sort of a kind of antiquated kind of approach to building a dam? Will they make it out of concrete? For what it's worth, the State Historic Preservation Office, because this dam is in a historic district, has already opined that they want to see a dam in that place, and they think that the dam is an important kind of part of the historic district's character, which I think the city had just gotten that news when I reported it last, and I haven't followed up, but it seems like that carries some weight as far as what the city is going to do next. So even though the city is adamant that it has no further plans, no like future kind of final plans, and they'll probably hold more public meetings about it, I think that SHPO's opinion or recommendation is does hold a lot of weight. So I think, you know, you can probably expect that some sort of dam will have to be rebuilt in the future, but that's kind of getting ahead of things. So I don't know. I'll keep following this and see, try to make it over there when the city actually starts work on the dam. If it hasn't already, I haven't been there today. So
did they mention where the funds for it come from? Is there some sort of emergency fund that they can dip into?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I know that this will probably, with the city taxpayers, or this is going to come from city funds in some way. I don't know that they'll be able to be reimbursed or anything, but you know, they had the initial way that they discovered this was because they were doing work on a FEMA funded project from hurricane damage from years ago. Yeah. They were kind of doing preliminary investigative work to repair the abutments, which are the side of the dam. And then when they did this kind of cursory inspection, they found these other cracks. And so that sort of plan to do the abutments kind of fell by the wayside while they attended to this more kind of urgent matter. Speaking of, well, not really, not as urgent matters. This does not involve life or safety. Last week, also, the city council authorized a new bond issuance for one project and tabled consideration of a bond issuance on another project. The one project that was approved was for Ingalls Avenue, the Ingalls Avenue boat launch. That's sort of right behind what's that Italian bakery that everybody likes, right near kind of in the 700 range.
Bellinapoli?
Yes, Bellinapoli. Thank you. So this project has already is basically completely or was going to be completely. No, I'm sorry. I mixed. Yes, was going to be or rather is state funded, I believe, from a sort of patchwork of funds. But apparently because of one, they discovered on the ground portion of the work a lot of concrete buried underneath the ground because this was a former junkyard and God knows what else it was kind of serving as. So they needed more kind of funds to be able to remediate the site. And then also from the in-water work, I want to read a little bit of the planning commissioner's memo on this because it made me sort of, I was just kind of surprised by it. Additionally, this is me quoting from the memo. Additionally, bedrock under the river bottom sediment was found to be higher than anticipated in places, providing insufficient support for the sheet piling. This is like for the part of the in-water ramp for the, or I don't know if ramp is the technical term, but like for boats kind of getting into the water. Mm-hmm. Buried debris undetected in the bathymetric survey, such as cars, complicated the matter. A new plan to use permanent sheeting for the concrete boat launch form was considered the most preferred plan of attack. So it's going to cost, you know, another $65,000. So they have found during the course of doing this work and also during the course of doing the big kind of $17 million seawall repair work that's also kind of ongoing in the city. They've found cars in the Hudson.
Wow. As is tradition, when it gets old, you push it into the Hudson.
The contractor before the meeting, I asked him like how many, and he said they found three cars. One was a Buick, he said, but the others, I don't know if they identified what they were. I asked him, you know, what he thought or how did those cars get there, and he sort of didn't want to speculate. We can all speculate, I guess. Yeah, I have no idea how that happens. I guess, you know, that particular site right near there was a junkyard, so maybe one rolled in. I have no idea. But I thought that was just so bizarre. Anyway, that project, the Ingalls Ave boat launch, is about 75% complete, so I guess it's sort of on schedule. The other project that didn't get approval was the Powers Park rehabilitation. This is a sort of historic park. It's kind of similar. This is up in Lansingburg. If you're not familiar with this park, Washington Park, the private park, Powers Park is not private. It's open to the public, but it's about the same size and of about the same era. It kind of has the fence isn't in as good shape, and there's indeed, I think, one side of the fence is completely missing, but they want to restore that sort of wrought iron fence thing and kind of do some work on these paths pathways that are through the park. I think as it is, it's sort of an adequate park, but it's sort of underutilized and also maybe could use a little bit of sprucing up. And this is the it was going to be basically state funded through a grant, about $500,000. But bids came back closer. The lowest bid rather came back at like $600,000. So, and then the city basically asked the council to approve another $300,000 in bonding. So state, so city taxpayers then would be essentially borrowing to be able to pay for those repairs to the park. And I think that figure was just a bridge too far for a bunch of members of the council. They sort of balked and thought that that was just, you know, they were like, it's a nice idea that you want to fix up this park, but that's just way too much money. You know, we just bonded, you know, the city just bonded for two swimming pools, in the, you know, in the latest sort of budget deliberations, and so I think they were just kind of like, go back to the drawing board, and the council, I mean the administration, eventually relented and said, okay, fine, we'll take a look at it, we'll see if we can pare down the kind of, maybe take a look at some of the trimmings for this park and maybe not try to spend so much money. So that's, again, we'll keep tabs and see when that comes back, and they'll probably have to put it out to bid again. They're going to have to go back to the state to get like approval to modify the plans because it's already basically state funded. So that is a big mess. And then if I have time, the one other big city project in Lansingburg, again, not city project, private sector project, is the former Standard Manufacturing Building. This is at 750 Second Avenue. Right around 120th Street. The building takes up a whole block, and there have been plans already approved by the Planning Commission to convert the upper floors of this building into apartments while keeping the first floor or the ground floor retail, that includes like a uniform company, you know, like textile kind of stuff. And the owners of that building, that business there, are also members of an LLC that owns the building, and another member of that LLC has, I'm going to speak in broad strokes because it's a fairly complicated lawsuit, but a member of that LLC that owns the building has sued the other members of that LLC, basically saying that he's been cut out of the ongoing effort to redevelop that property. So he basically says that the other members of that LLC have made deals related to the building without him, or created other LLCs to deal with the redevelopment of that property without him, applied for historic tax credits without him. And basically, by doing all these things that are alleged, those other members have diluted this member's interest in the LLC. Anyway, long story short, it seems like I guess I'm interested in it because it's a huge building. It would be a big deal for Lansingburg if this property were to be redeveloped. It's big, hulking warehouse, one of the last huge kind of warehouses in Troy, I guess, that hasn't been developed into housing at this point, or been put into a more kind of productive use. You know, not far from there at 701 River Street, Redburn Development is also in the process of, you know, converting that old warehouse into housing, and, you know, with retail on the bottom. So it's a trend that we're seeing in Troy, or that we've seen over the past couple of years, but it seems like this lawsuit at the very least could, you know, delay that effort. And so I'll be following to see, you know, what the other members of the LLC say in response to this lawsuit, whether they say it's, you know, they didn't respond when I reached out, or one member of the LLC, that was named in the lawsuit didn't respond. So we'll see what they say in response. And whether they think it's, you know, spurious, or whether a court finds that there's some merit to it. I guess we'll see. Do we still have time?
We have a couple minutes.
You can read more of about this next thing in the last Troy letter. There's a weird lawsuit that has now made its way to an appellate court in the state of New York that oversees courts in Rensselaer County, as well as many other counties in this general region. The case involves RPI. RPI is a neighbor of a professor that also owns a property next door. This is on a street right near RPI's campus. And RPI has sued the neighbor, the neighbor, who's also, again, an professor of RPI, saying to try to obtain a judicial decision that says that RPI has the right, it's called a prescriptive easement, has the right to use about 2 feet of this professor's property. Basically, because RPI says that the driveway of their property is such that when you park in RPI's driveway and open your door, you have to step onto this RPI professor's property. And the RPI professor has grown to not like this. And they had even put up, they didn't call it a fence, they called it a boundary marker, but basically a couple of stakes and a little chain that marked where the property line is, that RPI says prevented people, tenants of this RPI property, from being able to open their door and walk out and exit their vehicle and thus walking onto the RPI professor's property. It's amazing to me, and this is sort of one of the reasons that I included it in the last letter, that this has made it, this litigation has made it to the second highest court in the state of New York. But so, you know, property rights disputes, man, they can get yeah, they can get acrimonious. Really, and it's an interesting case. RPI won at the county level, or at the lower court ruling. They ruled in favor of RPI, basically saying that yes, because RPI or previous owners of this building had allegedly been using this driveway for more than 10 years and basically using it openly. There's apparently a phrase,
yeah,
like open and notorious, which I love. If the use of someone else's property is open and notorious, I'm not a lawyer, but this is my understanding. If you're using a property openly and notoriously for 10 years, then you basically get that, you have that easement, basically you have that right to use that property in such a way. So the court said, yes, RPI has this prescriptive easement. The professor appealed. And so now it was just argued at the third department, the appellate division that handles cases from Rensselaer County. So in a month or two, we'll know. And I know, and I, for one, will be waiting with bated breath to find out, you know, whether RPI is really allowed to have this, or whether it'll be reversed. And then, you know, who knows? Maybe it could go to the Court of Appeals, the highest court in New York State, or maybe, you know, and then from there, maybe the Supreme Court, hopefully.
And where can people go to follow your story?
You can email me, luke.s.nathan@gmail.com, and just say I want Troy Letter and I can sign you up, or tinyletter.com/Troy_letter. You can also sign up there.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Luke, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you for having me.